that religion, like a lot of religions, just doesn't work. Economic history and even logic show us lots of things that are wrong about it, but that was pursued with abandon on the basis of theories of efficient markets, rational behavior, rational expectations, and so on, none of which had any empirical basis or founding. But they were the doctrines were accepted for the very simple reason that they were highly beneficial to wealth and power. And that makes them acceptable. And you get the results that you have. The undermining of the only means possible to try to deal with the existential crises that we have created. So again, it's a kind of perfect storm. Part all sorts of sources, including just socioeconomic policies of a bipartisan nature.
Noam Chomsky, speaking April 24th at the First Parish Church in Cambridge, Massachusetts, professor emeritus at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. His latest book, Requiem for the American Dream. And that does it for today's show. If you'd like to get a DVD copy, you can go to democracynow.org. Also, you can go there to read the transcript or get any video or audio podcast of any of our shows. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Massoud, Tarina Nandura, and Andre Lewis. Mike DiFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, and Paul Huckabee are engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley and Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. It is 8 a.m.
By the mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews, stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
God and do the things just say is right.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Rocker T and the 7th Street Band on Saturday, January 6th, beginning at 9 p.m. at Mississippi Studios in Portland. Rocker T is from Brooklyn and has 7 albums released by a number of labels playing reggae and reggaeton. Also performing will be the local artist Aaron Nigel Smith, Heavy City, and DJ Kansaman. Again, that's Rocker T and the 7th Street Band on Saturday, January 6th, 9 p.m. at Mississippi Studios, 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
At KBOO, we think that all communities deserve to be fully informed on the policies and decisions that will impact their lives, and we need your help to make that happen. We're looking for citizen journalists to help collect, report, and broadcast the news. Do you think that there are groups that are underrepresented or marginalized by the mainstream media? Are you aware of social, political, or environmental activities that don't have adequate visibility? Are there important issues in your town or region that aren't getting coverage? This is your chance to give a voice to the voiceless. You don't have to have experience, and you don't have to come into KBOO's Portland studio. You can contribute from wherever you live. If you have some basic writing skills and a desire to get the word out, we want you. Just send an email with your idea and contact information to newsdirector, that's all one word, newsdirector at kboo.fm, and include the words citizen journalist in the subject line, and the news team will contact you. Once again, send that email to newsdirector@kboo.fm.
They might be like Dr. Frankenstein in a way, because if you look at that book, you know, Mary Shelley's book, there's some parallels there, because, you know, you have these power-mad people who create a monster, the monster gets away from them and shows them up for who they are, and then they want to go after and kill the monster.
It's time for us to stand together as a nation, as one. We need to stand with Flint. We need to stand with Standing Rock.
Yeah.
We need to stand with Alabama.
Yeah.
We need to stand up as Americans and tell them that our water, our future, and our children are no longer for sale. Yeah.
Welcome to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance and alternative news from the nation's capital. I'm Esther Ivarum, reporting from the belly of the beast, as we say, where there is a bunch of crass thievery and underhanded betrayal of the American people going on, including by the so-called Beltway corporate media.
They might be like Dr. Frankenstein in a way, because if you look at that book, you know, Mary Shelley's book, there's some parallels there. They might be like Dr. Frankenstein in a way, because if you look at that book, you know, Mary Shelley's book, there's some parallels there, because, you know, you have these power-mad people who create a monster, the monster gets away from them and shows them up for who they are, and then they want to go after and kill the monster.
Not impact precious water resources.
We've been asking.
Voices from that rally in Hanover, Maryland, later in the show. Now I'm going to turn to international news with our geopolitical analyst, Professor Gerald Horn. Gerald, the ANC elections occurred this week, and what's the result, and what can you tell us about them?
Well, the result is that the new leader of the African National Congress and the odds-on favorite to become president of South Africa in 2019, if not before, is the multimillionaire, if not billionaire, businessman Cyril Ramaphosa, who you may recall was a leader of the mine workers union during the era of apartheid and was also the chief negotiator in the transition period from apartheid to what we have today. It's interesting to note that his chief opponent was the former
have to be close to the proximity of power here to be able to highlight this issue.
From Southwest DC, this is Chantal James.
Thank you, Chantal. Another federal policy that continues to do more harm than good is one that encourages fracking, hydraulic fracturing for natural gas, which is then piped across our communities, often for export overseas. On Tuesday, a rally was held to oppose a proposed Potomac pipeline, which would cross the Potomac River and the historic CNO Canal, potentially endangering the drinking water for 6 million people, including residents of the District of Columbia. TransCanada, the same company connected to the controversial Keystone XL pipeline, is behind the project. Mike Tidwell, director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, told the crowd in Hancock, Maryland on Tuesday that Maryland officials have not provided proof that this pipeline would not impact precious water resources.
We've been asking the Maryland Department of the Environment, the folks we're all about to go talk to in a second, we've been asking them literally for months to commit to a transparent public process to review the impacts that this radical pipeline for radical gas could have on water quality. Yes. And they will not commit to it.
We'll hear more voices from that rally in Hanover, Maryland, later in the show.
Thank you. future Palestinian state. It's been a central part of any kind of negotiations for peace between the Palestinians and Israel.
Well, the Security Council resolution on Jerusalem was vetoed by Ambassador Haley. But as you know, in the General Assembly, which is not subject to a United States veto, there was an overwhelming majority rebuking Mr. Trump and his attempt to say that Jerusalem is the eternal capital of Israel. This came in the wake of threats by Mr. Trump to cut back on foreign aid to those countries who did not vote the way he thinks they should have voted. There are a couple of takeaways that I glean from these recent events. One is the increasingly militant role of Turkey, whose relationship with the United States is deteriorating rapidly. Turkey was a major force in moving this General Assembly resolution, along with Egypt too, by the way, which has moved ever closer to Moscow, to the consternation of Washington. And secondly, this overwhelming vote against U.S. imperialism in the General Assembly also reflects something we've been talking about on the ground for some months now, which is this gathering broad front against U.S. imperialism, which I dare say took momentum in the wake of this rebuke of Mr. Trump on Jerusalem.
Well, we will definitely keep watching these issues and talk to you one more time this year, before the end of this year, to get your thoughts on just the year in general. So I look forward to talking to you again next week. I've been speaking with Gerald Horn, professor, author, activist, and frequent contributor to On the Ground. Thank you, Gerald.
Thank you.
Hard times, tales from the dark side, evidence of the settlements on my hard drive. Man, I swear my heart died at the end of that car ride. When I saw that checkpoint, welcome to apartheid. Soldiers wear military green at the checkpoint. Automatic guns, that's machine at the checkpoint. Tables not M16s at the checkpoint. Fingers on the trigger, you'll get leaned at the checkpoint. Little children, grown adults and teens at the checkpoint. All your papers better be clean at the checkpoint. Gotta put your finger on the screen at the checkpoint. And pray that red light turns green at the checkpoint. And Martin Luther King had a dream with a checkpoint. He wake with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
And Martin Luther King had a dream with a checkpoint. He wake with loud screams from the scenes at the checkpoint. Is Malcolm X by any means at the checkpoint? Imagine if your daily routine was the checkpoint.
Separation walls that surround in the checkpoint. On top is barbed wire like a crown on the checkpoint. Better have your permits if you found at the checkpoint. Gumming on the tower, aiming down at the checkpoint. Idea is to keep you in fear at the checkpoint. Enter through the cage in the rear of the checkpoint. Feels like prison on a tear at the checkpoint. I'd rather be anywhere but here at this checkpoint. Nelson Mandela wasn't blind to the checkpoint. He stood for free Palestine at the checkpoint. Support BDS, don't give a dime to the checkpoint. This is international crime at the checkpoint. Arabs get treated like dogs at the checkpoint. Cause discrimination is the law at the checkpoint. Criminalized without a cause at the checkpoint. I'm just telling you what I saw at the checkpoint.
And now it's my great honor to welcome Paula Jean Swearingen. She is a native of Mullins, West Virginia, coming from several generations of a coal mining family. America was built by West Virginia coal, but like so many other Appalachian families, Paula's family also paid a steep price for coal. She lost her grandfather to black lung. Her uncles have since been diagnosed with the disease as well. The beautiful streams and rivers she grew up on have become toxic. In fact, she always thought she was a redhead because the water from her shower stained her brown hair. In the last 10 years, she has been a strong voice for social, economic, and environmental justice work, advocating for clean water, healthy communities, and a more stable and diverse economy for her home state. And now we are pleased to have her lend her voice to Maryland and the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia to join in our efforts to stop the Potomac Pipeline and stand in solidarity with the communities here. Please give a warm hand to Paula Jean.
Hey, everybody. Now, this lady's right, and you wonder why we come all the way from the coal fields of West Virginia to stand out here in Maryland and raise a little hell about a pipeline, and I'll tell you why. I buried most of my family, and she didn't mention that I buried my daddy with cancer at 54 years old. And you look at West Virginia right now, one of the biggest polluting coal barons in West Virginia, was my Democratic governor, now is my Republican governor, and has put silica dust 3 miles from my house and my children's lungs. We have suffered in the coal fields. We have laid the platform for cultural genocide, but they, our incumbents, and these corporate polluters don't know one thing. This is our revolution. We are fighting back. We have been coming out the belly of the beast in the coal fields for decades. And just like our water, our struggles flow across our borders, but so does our unity, so does our human compassion, and so does our mother's will to fight for her children. So does a father's will in every American to fight for their community. You guys are going to go down the same path. If you think they're going to protect your water, they're not. It's time for us to stand together as a nation, as one. We need to stand with Flint. We need to stand with Standing Rock. We need to stand with Alabama. We need to stand up as Americans and tell them that our water, our future, and our children are no longer for sale. So I hope one thing when we leave here today is we do unite. We unite our resources, we unite our talents, and we go in here and tell these people, you know, every time a hearing is coming in our community, we know something bad is coming. So you go in there and you tell them no. Hell no. You don't want the pipelines. You don't want them the jobs outsourced like it's been in West Virginia. And we're Weirton and Wheeling. Those jobs aren't fair. They do not bring any type of economic development. And we want prosperity and we want a future for our children. Our children have to contend with the mess that we make. So not only no, hell no, go home and stay away.
Thank you, Paula Jean. Next, we have one of the people that's been on the front lines of this front. Her name is Patricia Kiesecker. She grew up on a farm in Berkeley Springs, and she and her husband were married in 1969, and she's been farming, the family has been farming that land for 7 generations. Right. And on December 22nd, 3 days before Christmas, they will be hauled into court once again to fight for their land and to preserve it from being trashed by a pipeline. So we'd like to give Patricia a warm welcome and have her say a few words. She's been a great leader and spokesperson for this fight.
Don't you worry.
I know how to handle them, too. Back in 2016, Mountaineer Gas appeared. The lead agents came saying, we want the land, and here is a contract, certain amount of money, and it is all done deal. We don't want the money, and you are on our farm land that didn't succeed. So they come along with other. But they can't get the one agent to take you on, and they send somebody else to take you on. They are always pressing you about doing the land, taking what they want, and all, and then they tell everybody, well, if you don't go along with it, we give them the domain. They did. They took us to court before the 4th of July, and they took our land away from us, and all. We weren't allowed to stop them at all. I've asked them, you have the right from the court to take the land, but you don't have the right to dictate to us. And that's what they're doing. They are going 75 feet across our property for almost a mile. They hold 50 feet from that time on. The destruction they're going to cause, a lot of this is farmed, wide open fields. That's what they want. They want to get in our biggest fields because they can lay a mile of pipe in a day in an open field. And they have keeping to 50 feet, which we will pay property tax on, and all forever.
That's
and then we're supposed to be responsible for anything that happens. Their fault, our fault. How would you ever pay what it's going to cost if one of these things explodes? You know, it's just, it's ridiculous that they have just, we always thought we were safe, but unfortunately everything in the domain was based on Ural's canal. Well, now they're started with a transmission line. Before we went to the commissioners in Berkeley Springs, they come out with it in the paper, they're going to be a distribution line. Okay, well, you all haven't made it over there yet, so now we're going to be a storage line. Now, it's 400 pound pressure per square inch. They can jack that pressure up to 475 underground and all.
this is our heritage for our children, grandchildren, and I have great-grandchildren. And it's all about the money, according to them, you know. If you want to know how they rip people off, go to your courthouse. Know the people that's in next to you or whatever. It's a matter of public record once they take your land or do their little deal. And the money that they gave people was piddling and all. They started out with $26,000 for us. The day we went to court, they brought their check of $59,000 something. We told them it was blood money. We don't want it at all. It's not about the money at all. Yeah, we could use it. We had a barn torched and all, and we've had a lot of bad things with us that we could use the money. But that's not what the land is for. We have farmed it for 80 plus years. My husband has cleared a lot of that land. He's put blood, sweat, and tears in that property. Because when you ever clean land and you know what sticker bushes are, let me tell you, you got blood and you got tears. We need to change the eminent domain law. It's not for us. It's for the government and the big companies to take it away. They're making an example out of us. Like I said, they took us to court before July. Now they're taking us on Friday before Christmas. I guess they get their kicks out of aggravating us because we're fighting them and not just falling over and saying, take it all, which is what they want to do. But thank you all. I appreciate everything everybody does.
Thank you, Patricia. Next, I'd like to introduce Mike Tidwell. He's my great boss and also the founder and director of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network.
Well, thanks for coming out. It's great again. I think the last time I saw a lot of y'all was holding hands across the Shepherdstown Bridge. Listen, we're here about fracking. I mean, basically, that's what we're talking about. Fracking is a radical process. It's a radical technology to force gas up from the ground to cause underground earthquakes, to basically explode the mountains on the inside to get the gas to come up. It's so radical that our state has banned it, my state of Maryland. Yeah. It's so radical that even our Republican governor of Maryland agrees it's radical. And yet, Larry Hogan is ready to grant a permit to let a radical pipeline for radical gas pass through the state of Maryland. And that's what really concerns me, is because we've been asking the Maryland Department of the Environment, the folks we're all about to go talk to in a second, we've been asking them literally for months to commit to a transparent public process to review the impacts that this radical pipeline for radical gas could have on water quality. And they will not commit to it. I have a text from the Secretary of the Maryland Department of the Environment tonight saying, no, we're still considering it. Now, this is a pipeline 75 feet wide right-of-way. They're going to trench underground. They're going to go through karst Swiss cheese-type caves that are connected to the Potomac River, which is the drinking water of 6 million people. And they're not sure if they want to do a transparent certification process on water. They're still unsure about that. Now, here's another thing. I don't know if the mayor of Boonesboro and the county commissioners in Washington County very frequently get on the same page with the council members of the District of Columbia, but all those people I just mentioned have sent letters to Larry Hogan saying, we're concerned about this radical pipeline. So you've got the D.C. Council, the Boonesboro Mayor, the Washington County Commissioners all agreeing that we need a transparent public process for what's called a 401 certification. This is what we all need to be talking about over and over again tonight and every night until we get it, and that is a public, transparent hearing on the impact of this pipeline on water quality. Until we get it, this is a sham. Yeah. This is as big a sham as fracking. This is an impact on us as big as fracking, because this will not be the last pipeline. Nope. There will be more. This pipeline alone would impact 19 Maryland streams and 10 wetlands. It would impact 100 wetlands and streams in West Virginia. And so we're talking about a big impact. And unless and until we have a full public hearing, we're not asking for a lot, Governor. We're asking for light. We're asking for, here we are in the darkness tonight. We are surrounded by darkness on this pipeline. All the facts are not on the table. We don't know what this drilling is going to do. our drinking water for potentially 6 million people, and we need to bring light to this process. So let's fight together, let's go, let's win. Thank you.
If you're just tuning in, you just heard voices from a press conference and rally in opposition to a proposed Potomac pipeline that would carry fracked natural gas, crossing the Potomac River and the historic CNO Canal, and potentially endanger drinking water for 6 million people. The rally was held Tuesday, December 19th in Hancock, Maryland, about 30 miles north of D.C. This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, Voices of Resistance from the nation's capital. I'm Esther Avarum. When we come back, Truth, Lies, and Videotape in Corporate Media, this month's episode of The F Word. Stay with us.
Now we're moving into our final segment for 2017 of The F Word, our monthly exploration of fascism, what the revolutionary George Jackson defined as the complete control of the state by monopoly capital. Certainly, as we see this year, the Trump cabinet dominated by millionaires and billionaires who are either dismantling their public agencies or turning over the public treasure, trust, and property to private corporations, you could say that we have been doing segments on The F Word all year. But for this month, we're going to turn our attention to the news and information industry and the increased control of corporations in an already corporatized industry. Joining me on the line is author and educator Christopher Chambers, professor of media studies at Georgetown University, and a frequent commentator on mass communications and culture. Welcome to On the Ground, Professor Chambers.
It's great to be here.
Well, it's difficult to know where to start. But I want to keep referring back to the corporate role in all of this. I'm hearing a lot of criticism on the left about the mainstream media's constant obsession about Russia, as opposed to covering so many of the other issues that are really impacting Americans, the environment, this atrocious tax bill, attacks on our health, labor, on so many fronts, and not to mention the bloated military budget. What do you think about that criticism?
Well, it's because of the corporate media business model. We have issues, and that's not to say that Russiagate has come up out of thin air. I mean, there are issues there, and there are some problems there that need to be addressed, but does it need to take over the corporate media's 24-hour news cycle? Here's the thing. It's very sexy for them. It's a good tale of good and evil for them. It gets eyeballs on their site. It gets eyeballs on their legacy TV channels. It gets eyeballs on, you know, what could be the last gasp of print journalism, too. And for print journalism, it also helps them harken back to their golden age of investigative journalism. They like to say that. So, I mean, it fits their business model perfectly, where on the other hand, where you have issues of the environment, poisoning the environment of native peoples, getting pipelines shoved through them that burst, that of this tax bill, which, you know, is overwhelmingly unpopular, yet it still is going forward because, you know, the mainstream media has not picked it apart to the extent that it should have. Those are issues that for them, at least, they claim are complicated and it's hard for them to cover. To you and I, that sounds stupid, but to them and in their business model, it makes perfect sense. And so that is a lot of that going on. A lot of it is not ideological on any level. It is just it fits their business model.
It's funny that you mentioned the word complication. I think it was either last week or the week before we played a video from the U.S. campaign for Palestinian rights. And the title of the video is actually Palestine 101. It's not that complicated. And as you see, just recently, you know, Trump making this really incendiary move to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem and declare that Israel's capital, that the coverage of that was so skewed in many ways to not really give the history. And I just bring that up because that's an area where you see they're receiving very little coverage and from the perspective of Palestinian people, and they say that that's too complicated.
Well, yeah, I mean, it wasn't only skewed, it was very superficial, you know, because you have a situation where even the details, the factual details of what he said this move would entail was not even explored. Like, how long would it take? What are the logistics? It's almost like he announced it, they gobbled it up, they shoved it down our throats, they skewed it entirely towards, not just Israel, but the minority of people in Israel that are pushing this kind of activism against the Palestinians, because there are, you know, big swaths of the Israeli population that don't want to have this militant stance that Netanyahu has, but nobody has explored that aspect of it. There's a possibility that this might not even physically happen, not to mention within the time frame that he says, but they didn't even go into that part. So in addition to skewing against the Palestinian people, you also have a lack of depth of reporting as to what the actual details are. That, again, fits their corporate business model.
Speaking of the business model, when I hear the term fake news, when I hear all this discussion about collusion, Russian interference in the elections, I mean, I can't help but think back to all those months during the campaign when Trump was given, I think, I don't know whether it was millions or billions of dollars in free advertising when...
It was called unearned time. And if you look at the three legacy TV networks, CNN, I'm not going to count Fox because that's a whole nother, a whole nother thing, but if you look at the three legacy broadcast networks plus CNN, it was about the equivalent of about $1 billion in unearned time. And, you know, and so maybe they might be like Dr. Frankenstein in a way, because if you look at that book, you know, Mary Shelley's book, there's some parallels there, because, you know, you have these power-mad people who create a monster, the monster gets away from them and shows them up for who they are, and then they want to go after and kill the monster. So there is that kind of a parallel. Now, I don't want to make too much of it, you know, I'm kind of saying it tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, you do see those parallels. And, you know, I don't ascribe any noble intentions to them for that, because they were the ones that created the situation, they were the ones that benefited from the situation. The way they still do, because people are watching and reading more than ever.
The reason I bring that up is because of the constant claim about interfering in the elections, you know? And I can't think of anything that was more interfering than this constant barrage of coverage of Trump and uncritical coverage. It's not as if they were analyzing what he was doing. And you know, this is apropos because we're just past 1 year of his being elected. And not only just kind of broadcasting the speeches, you know, where he's talking about build the wall and disparaging people of color and having actual fist fights in the audience publicized and him having people thrown out. I'm still haunted by a picture of a young woman, a young black woman being pushed around in the crowd, and she keeps her composure. But you know, you have these racists, like, you know, pushing her, spitting at her, and pushing her out. But this was all broadcast, you know, it's kind of like this election porn, you call it election porn. And then sometimes they would even broadcast the empty podium while they were waiting on him to come, as opposed to giving time to Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton or whoever who might be running.
It was heaven sent for them in terms of ratings bait And, you know, in a very interesting way, and again, I talk about levels of irony here, layers of irony, they are part of corporate entities that have made money off of his pledge and his and the people he's put in the cabinet and the Congress that he's pulled with him to deregulate, to denigrate labor, to raise capital. They have benefited from that. So you're not going to see them go after him with the alacrity and with the ethics that they should. I mean, you know, you actually do see an element of that even in the net neutrality battle that's going on right now.
Absolutely. Because, that's what I was going to get to next, you know, because yeah. This is a really important issue.
Well, it is. And, you know, and again, when I said I don't want to ascribe virtuous motives to some people, but you do see, you have the ironic situation where you have the tech giants who claim to be on the side of the little people of color, of consumers, of small, innovative content creators who will be wiped out or ill-affected by net neutrality, whereas they are, you know, trillion-dollar companies, they are against it for their own selfish reasons. Likewise, there are people on the other side, like, you know, AT&T and Verizon, who are for destroying net neutrality for their own selfish reasons. So there is this intercorporate fighting. You know, it's kind of hard to be a tiny person when you see two giant dinosaurs, or like in those Godzilla movies, fighting each other, and we're down at the bottom at their feet, and they don't really care who they crush, but they're trying to kill each other. So you do have that situation. I mean, it is kind of analogous in some respects to what's going on with corporate media and how they kind of created Trump.
You know, while you're talking about online issues, the other thing that's happened that really hasn't gotten a lot of exposure is a change in the algorithms in Google and Facebook this year that has tremendously impacted progressive media, and which is kind of taking its last stand online, you know, and so to destroy that, I mean, it's already been seriously destroyed. Websites like Alternet, I think Democracy Now, many websites have seen a dramatic decrease in their web traffic after Google and Facebook changed their algorithms. A lot of people fear that this net neutrality issue will be a further have a further and really negative impact on people's ability to get out a different type of content, what we consider real news, not fake news.
Well, no, but it will. It'll affect Alternet, Democracy Now!, people trying to get out true and pure, you know, progressive message, just as it will affect the people who are trying to get out a pure and truer form of entertainment, you know, that isn't just at least common denominator entertainment. Therein is another irony, where Facebook and Google are trying to fight to keep net neutrality, yet their own practices are helping to kill off the very people that they claim are they're allied with. You know, let's face it, we have a situation here where Google and Facebook want to live and die by the algorithm, when they need to basically own up to the fact that they are media outlets. And maybe at some point, you know, a lot of this is going to have to go back to, this is dangerous, you know, in certain respects, because look at what's happened to our corporate media. But there is an argument to be made that they need to lend less emphasis on these algorithms and more on hands-on human editors. Because, you know, these things are not the neutral digital creatures that we think they are. They have operated to empower negative fascist movements and create the bubbles that the people that feed those live under.
Well, you know, there have been a number of other things that have happened, too. I'm thinking recently, RT being made to register as a foreign agent, and then after that, soon after that, they were stripped of their press credentials, I think, to cover the Capitol Hill and I think also the White House, right? So it had a consequence. It wasn't just this benign registration, which they were made to do. It wasn't that it wasn't an option. And then to have your media credentials stripped away, that seems to be a definite suppression of an alternative view. And so what are your thoughts on that?
it was the classic catch-22, which, you know, from the actual novel, you have to do something, but if you do it, then you're screwed. And I think that the move to compel them to register as a foreign agent, as a Foreign Agents Registration Act, was a form of censorship. The American arm of any foreign news organization does have certain First Amendment rights. It's not like 100%, as, say, the New York Times or CBS would, but it is there. And you have to have a rational reason, a very good rational reason, to do what you're going to do to a foreign news organization. Otherwise, you know, you're violating the First Amendment. If it were an American organization, it would be an overwhelming reason, you know, but you could split hairs of what legitimate and overwhelming and rational mean, but this clearly was a move to punish them. I think it came on the heels of, as I said, Google, Facebook, and I believe it was Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Going on Capitol Hill and basically doing a, you know, kind of a washing of hands, a Pontius Pilate, if you will, and saying, look, you know, whatever you want us to do, we'll do. But the one thing that I would have wanted them to do was get up and admit that they're media outlets now. And they need to act like media outlets and act more responsibly and not say, look, we're just tech companies. We have this digital algorithm, and that's what leads us around by the nose, and we can't be expected to do anything. Which is interesting, because when they got up there, they said, well, we can do stuff. We can pinpoint RT and censor them, which is interesting also, because it was these bots, these apps, and these news sites that really were spurious and didn't really exist, that if you're a believer in fake news, they were the ones who were purveying it, not
right.
RT.
Right.
And, you know, so they did nothing to cut out these bots, these apps that were regenerating these messages, or to investigate and vet these news sites that were generating messages. They went after a legitimate news organization, you know, and that is how, you know, you don't see them do it with the BBC or even China Global National TV or Nippon News, you know, any international, any nation's news presence in the United States.
Well, that's why I would have to disagree somewhat with the statement you made earlier about it not being ideological, because when you look at that move against RT, that was definitely ideological, you know? And then when I look at the coverage of some of these, switching back to the corporate news outlets right now, when I look at the coverage of Russia, of Venezuela, Libya, and again, Israel, which we mentioned earlier, it's totally ideological. And it's to the point where, I mean, even some of the other foreign news outlets that they prefer, because they also parrot the same line, like France 28 or the French channel. Every time they get a chance, they disparage Venezuela, and they're taking their news from someone in the right-wing opposition there. And that's all they report on. And that's how they get their news. So I see the coverage there as being very biased and very much in lockstep with, I don't know if you call it the deep state, if it's not with Trump. It's definitely with the military industrial complex and how they view the world and what they consider to be American interests.
Right. No, I understand.
So it all feels so Orwellian to me. I mean, it's to the point where, as someone like me who is on the left, there are very few places that, in terms of TV, where you can really get information that you know is correct. And every night there's a spewing of, I consider, just naked propaganda. And it's sad because, you know, as a veteran journalist, I still believe in the power of the press, and I believe in it being the fourth estate for real, not an extension of power, not an extension of corporate power.
Yeah, it's a sad time for that. And you're going to see, I think if you're on the left and you want to believe in, you know, legacy media, and you want to believe in some of the new media outlets there. I mean, if you're going to do that, you know, it's almost like you're going to have to hold your nose at certain things that they do. I mean, there are certain things that the Washington Post and the New York Times are doing that are absolutely despicable. But they're also...
Give me an example of what you...
There's coverage of Venezuela and, say... what went on in Libya, et cetera. Certain aspects of what they're doing with Russia and the Mueller investigation, you know, some of it is critical, some of it is not, some of it is purely informative. I mean, there are certain things that they're doing that you would look at and go, okay, well, what is their angle here? But then there are others where they are exposing some glaring problems in, say, the tax plan, right. Or, you know, without them, we would not have come to see Roy Moore in his true light, and there would have been another extremist in the United States Senate, and other kinds of stories. So, I mean, it's a terrible time because, you know, you almost have to hold your nose at some things in order to see others. And there aren't outlets out there. I mean, they are out there. But as you said, I mean, the doors are closing on, say, Democracy Now and outlets like that. Not mm-hmm. shutting all the way, but it's just it's squeezing. And it's hard to search for those and dig for those sources that you can trust. You know, that, and again, you're right, that is an ongoing problem. And, you know, I don't see it being solved anytime soon. Because we are in this time of ferment, and we are in this time of layers of irony upon layers of irony. Well, you know, I mean, do I support the New York Times if they're going to go after Trump because I hate Trump because Trump's crazy, or do I not trust them either? But if I don't trust them either, who am I going to get on my side to fight? You know, it's getting to be that crazy, and I really yearn for a time where that did not happen. But, you know, we're going to go through a lot more ferment. Things are going to get a lot worse before they get better.
You know, just because I need to wrap up, you know, one of the kind of referring back to my original ideas about corporate control and the kinds of things that we kind of talk about on this segment is the idea that when you look at RT, when you look at BBC and other outlets that are state funded or state backed. And of course it's said in a real pejorative way that this is a really negative thing. But when you really look at the alternative model that we've been discussing, corporate control of the media organization, it's certainly not any better. And we can see from this year, even last year during the campaign, that having a news organization solely ruled by corporate profit leads us really down the wrong road.
Oh, very much so. I mean, and more so since the 1980s, where you had the first phases of corporate media consolidation. Because, you know, I mean, our three legacy networks have always been owned by somebody else, whether it's GE or whatever, you know. But when you had these companies basically get, you know, become part of even larger entities where investors in them were hedge funds or are hedge funds and other kinds of huge institutional investors that don't have any care for the average person at all, then it gets even worse. Now, I'm not saying that there was some golden age just because GE, you know, owned NBC, or you saw, you know, Shell Oil or Pillsbury Doughboy supporting CBS or whatever, that was some golden age. What I am saying is that the corporate control back then was a tiny bit more attenuated and a little bit more diffused. So we didn't see these massive accumulations of wealth and consolidation until the Reagan administration, and, you know, enabled all of that, which was basically part of their plan anyway. So in a sense, it's gotten worse. I'm not trying to say that there was a golden age where corporate control of the media was not a big problem back when Walter Cronkite or Ed Sullivan, you know, was around. I'm not saying that, but it was diffused enough and it was attenuated enough that when you did have some brave souls and you did have some people trying to strike out and do some interesting things, they were able to do it. I mean, I'll give you the perfect example. It'd probably be CNN, when it was under control of Ted Turner, who was not, you know, who was not the nicest guy in the world, and, you know, a capitalist kind of robber baron on his own. But when you look at the professionalism and the type of stories that they did, and the international presence that they had compared to now, I would have to go as far and say that was a golden age. You know, because, you know, when you're comparing stuff that's truly crappy now as opposed to something that was somewhat crappy back then, somewhat crappy tends to look like a golden age. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I use, like, say, CNN, when it was founded by Ted Turner and under Ted Turner's control, as probably their golden age, because there was a more of a semblance of professionalism, of going after important stories, of reporting these stories out in a neutral way, but in a way that, that showed when there was bad stuff going on, this was bad stuff, that had people that worked there that knew what they were doing, and that had an international presence where you could go to who was being hurt by, say, apartheid policies in the Gaza Strip or the West Bank, and you could go to certain people because you had the people on the ground there as opposed to now. There right. was, you know, I would have to call it by default a better time. Even though it wasn't great, it was still corporate control. At least there was some. There were other things going on that militated against that. We don't have that anymore. It's all just a circus now.
You know, and you have to include. Unfortunately, you have to include a lot of public broadcasting in that. We joke on this show a lot of them. We call it National Petroleum Radio because it's definitely very much skewed toward so-called American interests.
That, you know, they would say that, you look, we don't have any choice because the people who control the faucets of support don't want to turn them on all the way to do what we really want to do, so we got to look at other sources of support. I'm not saying that's a good excuse. I'm just saying that's what they'll say. And the sad thing is that in a practical sense, they're right. The problem is that they're not honest about how that affects you and I and the people that, that come to depend on, say, them as an alternative source of information. And again, I mean, it's almost like, who's the lesser of many evils?
Okay, well, on that note, I'm going to have to wind up our talk today. I've been speaking with author and educator Christopher Chambers, professor of media studies at Georgetown University, and a frequent commentator on mass communications and culture. Thank you for joining me today, Professor.
It was a pleasure.
And that will do it for today's show. I want to thank Professor Christopher Chambers of Georgetown University and Professor Gerald Horn of the University of Houston. Thanks to Chantel James for her reporting. The music we played this hour included Jelly's Debiner by Robert Glasper, Checkpoint by Jaziri X, and Only So Much Oil in the Ground by Tower of Power. Our theme song is Voodoo Child by Jimi Hendrix. This is On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the nation's capital on Pacifica Radio. You can reach us and listen to complete versions of our shows on our website, onthegroundshow.org. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. I'm Esther Averam. I'll be signing books at the Busy Bee Holiday Gift and Art Show December 22nd and 23rd at 1510 9th Street, Northwest in Washington, D.C. Please tune in next week for our end of year special and keep raising your voice. Peace.
KBOO Portland. Hi, I'm Eileen with the Oregon Cultural Trust. Community radio means access to music, news, and programming for everyone. That's why I support KBOO with my contribution every year. It's also why I match that gift to the Oregon Cultural Trust. When you make a gift to KBOO, make a matching gift to the Cultural Trust by December 31st. Then you can use the cultural tax credit next year to reduce your state tax bill. It's true. And it's also how KBOO supporters guarantee access to cultural programming in Portland and all around the state. Visit culturaltrust.org today to learn more before December 31st.
Hope you might join us on New Year's Day of 2018 from 8 a.m. to noon for a special Michael Wells Memorial Dawn Concert. Michael Wells was a longtime KBOO volunteer, programmer, and worked as station manager and board member. Michael passed away last year. His many friends from KBOO and his family thought it would be a nice gesture to honor him by having a special Dawn Concert program to start the new year. In the early days of KBOO, Dawn Concert was a regularly scheduled morning program with a variety of program hosts. That's Dawn Concert honoring the late Michael Wells from 8 a.m. to noon on Monday, January 1st, 2018. Thank you.
I wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. And I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, listener-supported community radio. And it is just 9 o'clock now and time for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I am your host, Patricia Kahlberg, filling in today for Old Mole Denise Morris. And I will also be your radio engineer for this Christmas Monday, December 25. This morning on The Old Mole, Bill Resnick and Don McIntosh, senior reporter for the Northwest Labor Press, discuss union renewal with examples of unions that inspire and activate members. Fran Michel will be sharing an article published in Jacobin magazine by the North Pole Labor Study Group, which examines labor conditions in Santa's workshop. Movie Moles Denise Morris and Jan Hocken talk about Trading Places, a 1983 film set in the